This is Pure Decking for Thursday, September the 19th, 2013. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like descending into a police state, information security, and the Illuminati. I mean, the RIAA. I'm Morps, and tonight we have RU486, who has been hiding from the station and was denied doing IHN last week. Let's see. We got Sard and we have Suave. I am drinking a Blue Moon. Sard, I'm assuming you have Shock Top?
No, actually, I am drinking the last Budweiser that I bought for RU when he was bastard.
You mean I didn't drink them all?
I had like four left, dude.
Damn,
this is the last one. I had to drink all the others.
Well, wasting alcohol.
I left beer there.
Any alcohol is a cardinal sin, so I mean, you know, you can't just pour it down the drain.
Exactly. Might as well drink it. And plus, I'm out of Shock Top, so I didn't really have a choice.
You know, go with what you got.
Yeah, pretty much.
Suave, what do you got, man?
I am drinking Sapporo. That's that
nice.
Japanese beer.
Very nice. Yeah, I like Sapporo. That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Same, that's good stuff.
I don't get it very often, but I do like it. Are you, I'm assuming you're drinking coffee?
Big, big black bucket of coffee. Yes, sir. I don't have the luxury to drink on the shows. No.
Well, we'll just have to bring back your show you were doing at like 2 in the morning so that...
In the immortal words of Anthony, you're going to finish all them tonight? And to which Fox said, no, that's just a starter.
Nice.
He's Australian.
So... a little bit of station news. Of course, right after the website issues got cleaned up, like that night, literally, our dedicated box that runs the stream had a hard drive die. And I lost my fucking mind. Yeah, that was terrible. It's just like, are you... The whole reason we went with the dedicated host over me just running the thing out of my closet was to get away from these hardware failures. And so we've rebuilt the system. We're using a mildly different virtualization system, actually using VirtualBox because it's easier to back up than what we were doing. And so this show's kind of a test on the audio quality. There might be pops in there. We spent like an hour and a half trying to clean it all up, and I think it's okay. I think we got most of it, but there still might be a few glitches here and there, so it's probably going to be one of those things where we spend 6 months tuning the box before we ever feel like it's back where it was. So just bear with us as we get everything running again here. So,
all right, yeah, we'll remake it better, faster, stronger.
Yeah. I have an idea. Let's start a radio station. It'll be fun. No stress involved.
Oh, my God.
Just count to 10.
Yeah.
Woosa.
I do want to point out that we set up Sard with the access to pretty much everything on the system. So the plan is I'm going to take a break so I don't start shivving people. We're going to let Sard keep things running for a little bit while I, what would be the appropriate phrase, calm down?
Decompress.
Rehab.
Get really fucking drunk. So, yeah. But pretty much I think we're fairly close to where we were before the box went down. So, I mean, we're not in terrible shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if there's glitches in the recording or in the broadcast or something, let us know, you know, like exactly what you're hearing so I can try to clean it up even more. But, you know, don't lose your mind about it. It's we know it might be there. So anyways, let's go ahead and move on to the discussion topic. DRM only hurting your customers, because we ran into this when we were resetting up the broadcast box. Some of our broadcast software that we use apparently can only be registered so many times. And it turns out our broadcast software, you're allowed to register it 3 times. Now, they say that's for one for your main system, one for your backup, and one for a mobile rig. Well, we never got around to running a complete backup system, and we don't really need a mobile rig because the whole thing's kind of remote anyways. So we never really used the other activations except whenever we had a machine die, which happened way too often. But so you don't get it back. You don't get the activation back when a machine dies. Now, you can go into a running machine and deactivate it. So it's not like, you know, they're completely screwing you over. They're just trying to make sure that you're only running it in so many places at once, which I kind of understand. But this whole check-in system put a whole extra day on our rebuild time because apparently we hit the limit on our activations. And so because we did things properly, you know, paid for our software and tried to use everything legit, it took us a whole extra day to get the broadcast box back up and running. So I'm sitting, you know, we're sitting here like, you know, half an hour out from the show trying to tweak audio settings.
Awesome.
So
yeah,
that's
totally legit. Yeah.
The whole joke of it is if we had stuck with the pirated copy we started with.
I mean,
We were just testing it.
The test copy.
The let's make sure this is the software we want to use copy. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We couldn't see the air quotes again. Damn, I keep forgetting this is not a visual medium.
Yeah. Did I mention I need to take a break? So,
yeah,
fuck it. If we stuck with that, you know, we would have been back on the air sooner and we wouldn't even be having this conversation. It would just be, oh, well, back up. But no. We did everything legit and got kicked in the ass for it, essentially.
Right.
And, you know, the whole reason for not doing pirated software is the same reason we don't do pirated music. You know, we only do music that's open or Creative Commons or where the artist has said, hey, you can play this stuff. We are trying to do this correctly. You know what I mean? We're trying to do it legit and legal, just kind of... I don't know what's the phrase. Indie outside of the big mainstream rig?
Wouldn't say that outside the mainstream there. One of our artists was actually stomping on around because our station was down. I had to go listen to other stations. Fucking terrible with ads. And hi, Toshi. And well, there was an interview with one of our artists on there on a quite reputable commercial station.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah, we were playing them about a year and a bit before they were... Well, they're actually starting to be discovered pretty hard. That's Pitter Spatter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been listening excellent to several band, of the tracks the lately. They're
Yeah, they've got a new album, I think, Big Said, and they've pimped out Axis, which... One of their friends, which is another band we play on the station, they're starting to get a lot of traction now as well with their second album release.
Very nice. So we're leading the mainstream here then.
I didn't want to say that, but let's just say we sound a lot better. Our playlists are a lot nicer and there's no... Please send us some money every 5 minutes or you're listening to... bloody blah 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 every 2 seconds. You know, when I know I'm on the station, I can see the webpage open. Stop pimping.
Well, I did think we were going to put in some bumpers like once every 2 hours or something like that.
Yeah, eventually.
We're gonna
in case the stoners are listening and they forget what they're listening to. Oh, that's what I'm listening to again, man. Yeah.
Well, actually, the thing is, I want to start getting the station listed in more of the directories. Like, we're listed in the IceCast directory, but, you know, we can get listed in a few other radio station directories, and I've been, well, putting it off for one thing because we've been having system issues and I'm lazy, but I do want to eventually get put in that, and so there's a chance somebody's going to be listening to the station just by finding it through Winamp or a directory and not actually seeing the website. Mm-hmm. Granted, in the stream information is the website, so somebody finds it that way ought to be able to see on galaxy15radio.com. It's not exactly a hard domain either, so you know they ought to be able to find it. But you know, I do want to get some of that stuff in rotation. You know, occasional bumper, but like you know, every couple of hours, maybe. Yeah.
Right. Some of the similar ones I was listening to every, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, not like every other song, have it come up and play a 2-minute bumper talking about how wonderful we are. No, it's just like, you know, 10 seconds, like, just a, you know, maybe say something witty, you're listening to G15 next, and, you know, goes right back to the music. Actually, I had some ideas about the station, too, since we're talking about this. Some things I'd like to script up when we get a little bit farther along with our setup. I was toying around with the idea of a skip button on the website. Like, if you don't like tracks that's playing, you can just hit the button and skip it.
That'd be great.
But, you know, how do you prevent abuse from that, right? So, one, we'd have to figure out tracks that maybe you couldn't skip. Like, do we want to let people skip the shows? Or maybe put some logic to it. If X number of people are listening, you know, maybe half of them have to vote to skip, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm very, very early, just a concept. I kind of know how to make it happen, but I haven't done anything with it yet, so we're going to be doing some neat stuff once we get going here, and we just need to keep our broadcast rig running long enough to get some of this shit coded.
Exactly.
So, I guess back to our discussion topic here. So why is it that somebody who's trying to do things correctly gets kicked in the dick?
Yeah.
Whereas if we just went with the pirated copy, we wouldn't have had that problem.
Right.
We would have been up and running a full day ahead of time. Now, in the software provider's defense, they did get to it fairly quickly based on their business hours. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was just when we hit the snag was like the worst possible time to send in the ticket. Because it's like they're not going to see it for a full day. So it's not entirely their fault that it took a full day. I'm not knocking their business practices. I'm just knocking the whole concept of you have to check in your software before you can use it. You know, the software we paid $300 for.
Right. No, it's a good point, dude.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a definite point towards software piracy, in my opinion.
Well, you think about it, right? You drop down this kind of money for some professional software, right?
Uh-huh.
And it has to call home, it has to register, it has to do all this other wacky shit. And
Yeah. You're
the person who paid the money for it. Somebody who pirates it, they're going to strip that shit out, and they're not going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, beyond that, you know, when you have DRM that calls home, what happens when their servers go down? You've purchased this item. You bought it. You own it.
You can't use it anymore.
But you aren't allowed to use it. You can't use it. It's unusable. And you know, like, this has happened time and time again, like Microsoft Music Store, you know, we've got the Walmart Music Store. There's a bunch of, like, ebook stores and stuff like that, where they've just shut down their licensing servers, and they're like, oh, sorry, too bad, you can't access your content anymore. Like,
right, so are you really purchasing something, or are you just kind of paying a bunch of money to hold it for a little while?
Yeah.
Seems that way, certainly.
I mean, do you actually own the software you buy anymore? And I guess you'd have to say no.
Well,
it
depends.
They can shut you down.
In some situations you do, others you don't. And I am not a big fan of renting software, and that's essentially what you're doing. It's not for a set time frame, but it's still renting software.
Well, I've hit this snag before. This isn't the first time I've had this problem with software where you can only register it so many times. It is, strangely enough, usually with audio software. And I find that part interesting. I have a copy of Ableton Live Lite, I think it is. It's an edition that came with one of my controllers. And it's fairly nice to play around in. And apparently it can only be activated so many times, and I mess with my systems a lot. So I, you know, had to go on their website and say, yeah, I formatted that box. I need to be able to reactivate my software. And so now every time I want to reinstall that thing, I have to go on their website and tell their support people why.
Horrible.
And justify it.
Wow.
I have to justify to them why I'm...
Customer, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no, I paid for this. This came with something I purchased. I mean, this is totally legit copy here. And if I want to use it, I have to go justify to you that, oh, yeah, that system got a piece of malware on it, and so I had to format it. So I kind of think what I'm going to be doing from now on is whenever I discover software that has this kind of activation, to just wrap it in a virtual machine so you can snapshot it and save it, that, you know, move it around and put it on different machines. But, I mean, I think that's nuts that I even have to do that, to, like, you know, devote a virtual machine to one piece of software so I can back up that snapshotted piece of software so that if their server goes down or, you know, I God forbid, I reinstall my computer too many times. I mean...
Yeah. Now you're trying to play by the rules, but then you're going to end up gaming the system just like you would if you were pirating it, I guess. But you paid money to game the system.
Yeah. Well, okay, to be fair, the software wasn't a selling point of that controller, but it's the same concept.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I guess it almost comes down to you should no longer just buy software because you need to. You should buy software to encourage the developer to continue supporting that software and to make more like it. So it's almost like going to a different business model, whereas before you were just buying a product. Now you're just giving them money to encourage them to continue supporting it.
I actually did that earlier today. I found a replacement for virtual audio cable. We're running this replacement on our server right now because we were having a bunch of problems with virtual audio cable. And it's free. And, you know, they've got a little donation box on there. So, yeah, I slung him $5 because his software worked and it was fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, it didn't have this demo crap all over it.
Yep.
So... You know, I mean, it's a... Oh, what was the link? HB Audio? HB-Audio? BB-Audio. That's what it was, BB-Audio. They got a free virtual audio cable on a little virtual mixer that saved us a lot of problems in getting some of this stuff set back up. So, but, you know... Yeah. You know, you think about it, I try to stay away from pirated software these days because most of it has a virus or a bot in it, but that's a different argument. You know, this continue along this line of thinking, trying to get back to where I was in my notes. Everybody I know who does IT in some professional capacity has had to go and pirate something at one point or another because the legitimate route was actually not available to them. I don't mean they couldn't afford whatever the, you know, the thing they needed was. It was, for whatever reason, they wanted to give this company money to buy this the software or whatever it was they needed, and they couldn't do it. You know, the DRM was in the way and preventing the system from working correctly, or their website wasn't working, or it was not the correct business hours or whatever, and it's like, you've got to get this thing working now.
Exactly.
So I know a lot of people. In fact, I can't think of anybody who I've worked with professionally in IT who hasn't ran out to FileCrop or Pirate Bay to grab something they need to get the job done today. And, you know, they'll usually end up still buying it. But, you know, I know a lot of people who would buy a game, especially in the secure ROM days. They'd buy the game. And then they'd go buy, they'd either go find the pirated copy or the crack for it because the DRM was so onerous it would rack their system.
Wow.
In fact, what was the game? Shoot. I think it might have been one of the Grand Theft Autos, like 3 or, not 3, what was the one after 3? The one that was set in the 80s.
Vice City,
because I think that one had a safe disk on it, and right after I installed it, I went to go get the no CD crack for it, and to remove the DRM, because a friend of mine had to replace his DVD drive, because SecureROM destroyed it, or not SecureROM, safe disk. it trashed the drive so hard, now that it was an older drive, but it trashed the drive so hard that it actually knocked the little laser out of alignment, and there was no way to really fix it. Like, the little rail inside the drive broke.
Wow.
You're spinning up all the time.
Right, because it kept checking to make sure the disk was there. So
yeah.
You kind of you know, if you got a slow bus or something, you kind of had to go get the crack, because at the time the system couldn't keep up with the DRM and the game. So, and you know, for a little bit more modern example, you ever try keeping the Adobe Suite running on a system with an encrypted disk? They may have fixed this one, but for a long time you pretty much couldn't do it, because Adobe would put their DRM and licenses in, you know, ring zero of the disk, where the little bootloader for your encrypted, you know, software would go. So, like, if you had encrypted your hard disk with TrueCrypt or anything, Adobe's DRM would blow it away so they could keep track of your Adobe suite.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So you might be left with a machine that can't boot because of Adobe's DRM.
Jeez.
So, and you know, not to mention, you know, like what you were saying earlier, Suave, how many things can you not use anymore because the server that was authenticating you shut down?
Oh, yeah. Like, in preparation for this topic, I went and hopped on the Wikipedia DRM page, and they have a massive list of services and software and stuff like that that's just no longer functional. And these are all from, like, big name brands and stuff like that. And, you know, like, even you could go look at, like, Windows. It's a perfect example where, you know, like, even if you go out and buy the retail version, not the OEM version, but the retail version, you've got a limited number of activations. And then if you want to install it again, you're going to have to jump through so many hoops. And if anybody's ever tried calling Microsoft customer support to get that stuff done, you're looking at, like, a good 8 to 10 hours of icking around.
Well, why don't you just go buy a new computer?
Yeah. Rebuy what you already own.
Pretty much.
We're saying you can't use it again.
Go to public library, take photo of the key on side of case, done.
Actually, I'm gonna go ahead and say this. I probably shouldn't. Most school systems, they have the little sticker on the side of their lab machines and their student machines that has a key on it, but they don't use that key. Most of them will have purchased a volume licensing agreement from Microsoft.
Yeah.
So they can install as many copies of Windows as they need. So you can a lot of times use those keys on the side if you can get the right copy of Windows to go with them.
I will admit I did this when I was in high school, and it worked amazingly.
I've done it.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, they're not actually using the keys, because the keys came with that machine, but they're all using their volume keys.
Now, to be fair, it usually is an OEM key, so you use it, and then that's it. You can't use it again, but...
Yeah,
you know, it's still free.
It's just an easy, disposable way of doing it if you absolutely need a key.
So, you know, and it's probably safer than going on some of the sites out there and trying, you know, the little key gens or whatever the hell.
Oh, yeah. You know, but, 9 times out of 10, a key gen is essentially just a virus with a gen on it.
With a little database in it, yeah. Like, you know, they found 30 keys, put them in their list, and... You know, wrapped it in this thing. So, but I mean, I don't know about you guys, but all this DRM crap, that was a big factor in my jump to Linux. You just get tired of it.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
You know, like, I'm a avid ebook reader, and I've got no problems with purchasing ebooks, but to this day, I still completely refuse to buy anything with DRM. Just for the sole reason that I would like to have access to that product on multiple devices. And, you know, many of my devices don't support that type of DRM. Or, you know, it's in the wrong format, because most of them end up doing, like, this Adobe PDF DRM crap, and I want an EPUB.
You know, right, or so, you have to go download the special viewer for their specific format.
And, of course,
I had a lot of fun cracking some of the... various Kindle formats, so I could put my Kindle books on a different device.
Oh, yeah, like, I remember, like, I think it's Audible, they do that. Yeah, you sign up and you get, like, 2 free ebooks or something, or 2 free audiobooks or something like that. So I signed up for that for the month, got my 2 free books, and immediately went and found a piece of software that would allow me to remove the DRM from it so I could use it on my MP3 player. And, you know, promptly canceled my service because DRM sucks.
Yeah,
but yeah, and you know, that's another thing about the DRM is it only keeps the honest people straight, because it's like I'm yet to find any sort of DRM that you can't get around, The only time that you really can't do anything with it is when it's like, you know, an online only game. Like, you know, like, I don't know. I'd say WoW, but people have hacked WoW and set up their own servers. But, you know, the whole point of that is, you know.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah. You know, like, at least.
Hell, we had a WoW server up before the game was actually released.
That's awesome.
Madman awesome. Will tell you stories of traversing the nothing where the map wasn't finished and he ran across just the void.
Things you shouldn't say while record has been pressed.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right.
Number 12.
Okay,
to Swamp's
like
point.
A long time ago now.
Statute of limitations has kicked in by now. Well, probably not, but we'll pretend.
This is why we use pseudonyms.
Yes. I was going to say, to Suave's point about it punishes the legit people, Nation and the IRC said it's always easier to burden people who follow rules with rules. It's very true. It's the same thing with gun control. Let's ban all the guns. You think that's going to stop the people that don't follow the laws from getting guns? I don't think so. Ask Aryu.
I'm not even going to go down the gun thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the same thing. It's...
Like,
it only hurts people that follow the rules.
Well, you look at that idiot that blew away, what was it, that naval base 3 days ago? He got caught 6 months previous shooting out the tires on a construction worker vehicle. He actually shot at someone's car, yet he could still get a shotgun. He complained to the naval base about, oh, that's right, he rang the police to tell him he was hearing voices and his microwave was telling him to kill people. Yet, he still got a gun. Like, that was... Like, he went through the proper channels.
Why was it the microwave?
Yes. Like, how do you get through the background check when 6 weeks ago the police were at your house and you're complaining that the microwave's telling you to kill people?
Well, that's just a lag in the paperwork. It probably takes a year for any of that stuff to get in the databases. They actually check when they do a background check.
I know, but it just blows your way, dude.
So,
but DRM, yeah, it's only punishing those who follow the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the real bitch of it is a lot of times, though, there's no real way to avoid it. Like, there's not viable alternatives for some of the stuff that does the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, it's really only a matter of time. If you've got like a really draconian setup that's a pain to use and real inconvenience to its users, somebody's going to see that and identify that need and come out with another piece of software that does the same thing that doesn't inconvenience their users. It might take a little while, but it shows up and switch.
I was going to point out, just to close out the conversation, at least Steam manages to do it in a way that doesn't feel so damn crazy. But a lot of the games in Steam will still load in the other stuff, the Windows Live or whatever the hell it is.
God.
Don't even talk about Windows Live.
It's really unfortunate when you buy a game, log into your Steam account, launch the game, log into the game account, and then you also have to log into your like Windows gaming account as well. Exactly. So you have to log in 3 times to play a game.
So that point is actually kind of moot, because I was thinking that'd be a good place to close on. At least somebody figured out how to do it without being obnoxious, but they didn't exactly get it all right. So
I'm looking forward to Grand Theft Auto 5, you know, having to log in at least 5 times to 5 different services just so I can play. Because Grand Theft Auto 4, it was 4 services. Why not 5?
Am I going to, like, you know, have a lynch mob outside my door if I say I really don't give a flying rat's ass about Grand Theft Auto 5?
Oh, I don't either, man. Like, I'm just saying. I'll eventually play it and pick it up, but not hanging out with it or anything. Not like the major, massive boy.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to our news here. Current events, or whatever the hell I call it in the notes. First one up is from PBS and is awesome. Empathy for military robots could affect outcomes on the battlefield. That's the conclusion of Juliet Carpenter, a PhD in education at the University of Washington. Carpenter interviewed 23 explosive ordnance disposal personnel who regularly use robots on the job. She found that soldiers often anthropomorphize their robots, assigning them human attributes such as genders and names, and even displayed a kind of empathy towards the machines. They would say they were angry when a robot became dismantled because it's an important tool, and they would add poor little guy, or they would have a funeral for it, Carpenter said. These robots are critical tools they maintain, rely on, and use daily. There are also tools that happen to move around and act as a stand-in for a team member, keeping explosive ordnance disposal personnel at a safer distance from harm. You don't want someone to hesitate using one of these robots if they have feelings towards the robot that goes beyond a tool, she said. If you feel emotionally attached to something, it will affect your decision-making. Carpenter will publish her findings in a future book on human-robot interactions. Several interesting discussions have broken out on Reddit, where members of the military are recounting their experience with robots in the field. Reddit user Master Sterling reports that one bot received its own 21-gun salute.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Robot rights. I love this. It's like, oh no, you can't anthropomorphize the robots.
Bet it's gonna happen. Humans,
oh yeah, it's gonna happen.
Logical, physical, emotional attachments to inanimate objects. Hence the why children love stuffed animals and get very upset when they lose or one of them gets destroyed. Even cry and they have to have a fake funeral. It's what happens. We get attached to stuff.
Conversely, it's why we all find the big dog robot terrifying.
But, you know, it doesn't have to be a full-on robot or anything like that to get anthropomorphized. People name their tools and stuff like that. Like, we've got a 3D printer at work. Its name is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Well, doesn't the military has a long tradition of naming their guns.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just going to say, lots of people name their guns. It's weird. I don't know. Why do we do that, Ari? Why do we, like, get attached to stuff and then
it's just
it?
Hard-coded into us, man. Huh. It's part of our head structure. Yeah. It comes with anything like blankies, things like that. We have this tendency to have attachments to stuff that makes absolutely no psychological. No, that's not what I'm looking for. There's no value to us, really. You know, like a blankie or so it generally starts when you're young. And depending how attached you get is depending on the nurture and emotions and stuff like that that you're given as a child. So as an adult, if you become further and deeply attached to inanimate objects, it just means you're neglected with emotions as well, generally.
Makes sense. I saw a thing on I think it was National Geographic. This woman was in love with a wall. Literally, yeah. Like a block wall.
Well, what? She's seriously fucked up.
Yeah.
In my professional
Captain
opinion,
Obvious, your keep showing.
I was just gonna say thank you for that.
No, it happens, but yeah, which one of you guys has not been all like pissed off and upset when one of your boxes dies?
Oh,
or
absolutely.
You know, feel a bit emotional pulling it out and scavenging it for parts, even though it's 6 years old, it's been sitting in the corner for that long. Like, I can't bring myself to pull apart my first box. It still sits there. Little XP machine in the corner. It's the only one I've got left.
I had a Commodore 64 that I still check on every once in a while.
I had real hard time throwing away my first box, but I did it.
Yeah.
This
is going to be an issue in the future when it comes to robots on the battlefield is people getting emotionally attached to them. And I could see some idiot running out there to try and grab a robot that's had its limbs blown off or something to retrieve it.
Yeah.
They'll train it out of them, don't worry. And you want to see some fucked up individuals after they've broken them out of that, you will not care for anything.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely.
Well, they already break them down so far now to the point where it actually takes quite a lot to run into battle. Psychologically, we're not designed to do that. Well, not all of us, anyway. But,
people are psychologically designed to run the other way.
Pretty much. It's only your true hardcore psychos that will run into battle, so they actually reprogram them. The problem is that we don't deprogram them when they're discharged. They're sort of just, there you go, welcome to the community again. I know you've been in this safe, secure environment for the last 4 years where you've really had to not think or do anything. You've been told what to do. But now here's the real world again where you have to do everything on your own. Guess what? There's not 7 to 12 men around you all the time to help you out. Guess how lonely you get very quickly. The mind.
What if they
just
let you keep your robots? I mean,
well, if you kept the robot, you'd have some attachment. You know, like they never discharge like a working dog to a kennel or anything like that. It usually goes to its owner because the dog generally breaks down, has a psychological disorder, and then starts ripping everything apart. They have to give it to its handler. I think, like, as we see robots develop more as well, and when they start having some sort of sentience, they're going to go psycho as well. Because we're going to be coding them, and we're going to be coding them the way we're coded.
Okay. Well, that'll be fun to watch. Next story up, this one's from Torrent Freak. The RIAA wants web browsers to block pirate sites.
Good luck. But now it's going to be the web browser's fault that you're on there.
Yeah. After more than a decade of aggressive anti-piracy actions directed through the courts, the world's largest entertainment companies are now looking to forge less confrontational partnerships with companies in the technology sector, in the belief that voluntary agreements can help a great deal in reducing online infringement. The RIAA and MPAA are trumpeting their efforts to make content legally available and are asking a wide range of service providers to help offer or help give those offerings room to grow. Later today, and that was actually yesterday, RIAA CEO Kerry Sherman will tell a House Judiciary subcommittee that such voluntary agreements have a vital role to play. In order to make this digital marketplace really work, we must ensure that these vibrant, new, legitimate, and authorized technologies are not undermined by those engaged in illegal activity. God, this person's worldview hurts my head. Voluntary initiatives. It's voluntary that you comply. Voluntary initiatives with internet intermediaries are a key component of that objective, Sherman will tell the hearing. The RIAA chairman begins by referencing an initiative signed by CBS, Disney, Crackle, Daily Motion, Fox, and Microsoft, and Vio, among others, way back in 2007, which explains some of the names on that list. The agreement, which Sherman says was one of the very first voluntary online anti-piracy initiatives, sought to boost UGC services while protecting rights holders. The RIAA hopes that it can breathe new life into the 16-year-old deal, which will see parties implement fingerprinting technology to filter out unauthorized video and audio, provide copyright holders with enhanced searching and identification means, work to identify predominantly infringing sites and block their links, track, identify, and ban repeat infringers while accommodating fair use. I like how accommodating fair use is in quotes. The UGC principles serve as a model for intermediaries and content owners working together voluntarily to assure that the provisions of the DMCA have meaning and are adapted to new technological advancements, Sherman will say. They should serve as a blueprint for new voluntary agreements between content owners and internet intermediaries to carry out the intent of the DMCA to protect both copyright owners and intermediaries. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the RIAA still has plenty of criticism for search engines such as Google, who it accuses of doing little to help with infringement. Yeah, because it's not their fucking problem. I love this. You're not doing our job for us, you bastards. I mean, am I wrong? It's not their fucking problem.
Exactly.
No, it's not. You know, honestly, this really sounds like the death throes of a dying industry.
Oh, it gets even better. The music group says it wants engines to look at whether sites are authorized or not, and then when it determines how results are placed. So, in other words, the RIAA wants control over your search results. We believe it would be useful to see voluntary initiatives by search engines that take into account whether or not a site is authorized to provide the content. How the fuck are they going to figure it out when they get DMCA complaints for the actual legitimate sites as well as the provide content at issue in determining search result rankings for searches to consume that content, Sherman will say. This could take into account not only the absolute number of copyright removal requests sent to a site to trigger demotion of that site, but also whether the site is authorized to provide the content to trigger a higher search rank for that site. Now here's the money part. The RIAA also says that Google's efforts to disappear links to child porn could be extended to infringing material, and that tools such as Chrome could divert users away from certain sites and towards others. Google has tools in its Chrome browser to warn users if they're going to sites that may be malicious. Shouldn't that technology be used to warn users of rogue sites, Sherman asked? Or better yet, can Google use similar technology to highlight or identify sites that are authorized? Imagine if links to content on legitimate sites were labeled directly in the search result with a certification mark indicating that the site is licensed and actually pays royalties to its creators. That educational method could have a profound impact on user behavior. So what they're saying here is the RIAA wants control of your search results. They want control of what websites your browser goes to, and they want to put piracy websites on the same lists as malware websites and illegal porn websites.
What?
Okay.
Did I read that wrong? Somebody tell me if I'm wrong.
No, that's what they want. And you know, if my search engine or web browser decides to implement these things, guess what? I'm using a different browser and a different search engine now.
Well, I look at it like this. The RIAA can't get this shit handled on their own. So they're going to go badger other technologies companies to do it for them for free, mind you. They're trying to get them to do it for fucking free. It's like, oh no, you've got to do that to comply with the DMCA. No, they don't. They have to provide methods, but they don't have to do all this crazy-ass software development. If you think about it, what they want Google to put into Chrome this certification stuff. Well, if people actually wanted that shit, well, one, Google would have already done it. But two, they could have put out their own web browser. Firefox open source, it's easy enough to modify, mm-hmm. You know, that does all of that. They could put out their own services that do all of that, and no one would use them, which is why they're trying to force, like, Google to do it, because people actually use Google.
Right, and they know that they have no leverage against any of these technologies, so that's why they're trying to get other people to do it for them.
It wouldn't be in Google's best interest anyway to implement.
No.
Because people are just going to switch over to someone else.
Yeah, it's just going to drive away their users.
Yahoo, hell, just going, I'm fucking do it, man. Do it.
I'm already getting rid of Chrome everywhere I can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's... They're constantly seeing this decline in sales, and, like, their business practices aren't working, and they're blaming it on the pirates. Because, you know, all the people who are, like, heading up these companies are generally the people who've been around for the last, like, two decades.
Scroll down to my next, maybe not the next Torrent Frink story, but the one after that.
Oh, do you have the one where, oh, okay.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We're going to have fun.
I won't touch on that.
This whole pure decking is pretty much rash on the RIAA for being fucking stupid.
Yeah.
So... Which, yeah, they are the Illuminati at this point. So,
yeah.
So, the next one up is from thehindu.com. RU sent me this one with the creepiest picture of the Brazilian president. I mean, my God.
Resting face.
I'm not sure what she's doing. She's kind of like, holy crap, did somebody, like, super glue dentures to her lower jaw or something? Looks like she's making a Bart Simpson face, maybe. I don't know, but... Anyways, so Brazil plans to divorce itself from the U.S.-centric internet over Washington's widespread online spying, a move that many experts feel will be a potentially dangerous first step towards politically fracturing a global network built with minimal interference by governments. Wait. I got distracted. Fuck.
Oh, I got it.
President Dilma Rousseff has ordered a series of measures aimed at greater Brazilian online independence and security following revelations that the U.S. National Security Agency's intercepted her communications, hacked into the state-owned Petrobras oil company's network, and spied on Brazilians who entrusted their personal data to U.S. tech companies such as Facebook and Google. The global backlash is only the beginning and will get far more severe in coming months, said Sasha Munerath, director of the Open Technology Institute at the Washington-based New America Foundation think tank. The notion of national privacy sovereignty is going to be an increasingly salient issue around the globe. While Brazil isn't proposing to bar its citizens from U.S. web, U.S.-based web services, it wants their data to be stored locally as the nation assumes greater control over Brazilians' internet use to protect them from NSA snooping. Ms. Rossoff says that she intends to push for new international rules on privacy and security in hardware and software during the UN General Assembly meeting later this month. Most of Brazil's global internet traffic passes through the United States, so Ms. Rossoff's government plans to lay underwater fiber optic cables directly to Europe and to link all of South American nations to create what it hopes will be a network free of U.S. eavesdropping, or in this case, just a network free of the United States. Ms. Rossoff is urging Brazil's Congress to compel Facebook, Google, and other U.S. companies to store all data generated by Brazilians on servers physically located inside Brazil in order to shield it from the NSA. If that happens and other nations follow suit, Silicon Valley's bottom line could be hit by lost business and higher operating costs. No shit. If you have to plop a data center down in every country that could do business with you, like crap. Brazil also plans to build more internet exchange points where vast amounts of data are relayed in order to route Brazilians' traffic away from potential interception. International spies, not just from the United States, also will adjust, experts said. Laying cable to Europe won't make Brazil safer, they say. The NSA has reportedly tapped into undersea telecoms cables for decades. Yeah, they actually have. Ms. Meredith and others argue that what's needed instead are strong international laws that hold nations accountable for guaranteeing online privacy. There's nothing viable that Brazil can really do to protect its citizens without changing what the U.S. is doing, he said. So, he's close. Brazil can simply cut off from the regulated internet and set up a national internet, which they're taking the first steps to doing from the looks of things here.
Yep. And as we were discussing earlier, man, think about what this means for global trade.
Yeah.
Well, this can cripple it. If you start cutting off and setting up your own national or, you know, even just maybe agreements between groups of nations, you know, you set up your smaller networks as, you know, like the Brazilian internet versus the American internet, and they might even connect up at places, but it won't be a truly open internet. You know what I mean? It'll be like, oh, you're going to United States internet. You have to go through this gateway and agree to these terms of service and blah, 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 blah.
Great
and
TSA on the internet.
I am a little concerned that they're just using this as an excuse to get more control over the internet of their citizens.
I'm sure.
That could be an aspect, too. We are talking about Brazil here. I just thought it was really interesting that this is sort of backlash we're getting from what happened.
Well, it's not really all that surprising. There's been talk about it, about different countries wanting to set up their own internet and break away from the United States-controlled internet for years. So this is just a nice impetus to do so.
This is the beginning of different dark nets that we'll see. I mean, own countries' private internets and with no ties to the external world? Or
pretty much.
You can sort of see it. It's going to go back to the day where it's not going to be just for the point-and-click generation or the phone. To actually use the internet the way we use it today, it's going to require slight more skill set than the average man, if you know what I mean. Like back in the day, using the BBS boards and stuff like that, and just even general computing back then.
Right. I mean. I don't think I have a problem with that, to be honest.
No, I don't either. It's just a pain in the ass to learn everything. For someone who's not IT-based with any education.
Hell, Sard and I were already talking about setting up a BBS on the servers.
Yeah, but you guys do all this. You're not thinking about the average person who doesn't work in IT.
No, those people are beneath noticing, so, I mean...
Go fuck yourself. You know, it only takes two signatures to have you committed in America. I checked it out. Batman's agreed for one. I just talked laser into it. It's all over, buddy. Now that he's running the station, we can get rid of you real easy.
Oh, well, I did say I wanted a break, didn't I? So
I'll get you a break, 6 months supervision.
Hey, and padded walls. Mids. Cool. Watch how far I can bounce around in here. No sharp objects, sir. But how am I supposed to carve up my roommate's face?
This one, I mean, like,
a little Z in his forehead. That's all.
It's my initials. It's just going to be a real pain in the ass for the average user who wants to find certain stuff and then realizes that they don't have the skill set because they haven't been doing it for the last 10 years.
That's what we call a learning opportunity.
Good point.
So, all right, next one up is from Torrent Freak. Over the past year, the focus of the anti-piracy enforcement has shifted from mandatory legislation to voluntary agreements between copyright groups and other stakeholders. The Center for Copyright Information is one of the pioneers in this field. Earlier this year, the Coalition of Copyright Holders and ISPs launched the Six Strikes Copyright Alert System. But the nonprofit company has additional plans to tackle the piracy problem. CCI's Executive Director Jill Lesser addresses the House Judiciary. Okay, this is the same. Yeah, this. I think it's the same Jill from the other story. Anyways, what they hope to do. Lesser states that it's still too early to evaluate the effectiveness of the alert system. However, through customer research, the CCI has learned some valuable insights that will help to frame their educational messages. To support companies' work, CCI has engaged in consumer research that will help us to understand what consumers do and do not know about P2P or peer-to-peer technology and their level of understanding about copyright laws. One of the troubling findings of the research is that most consumers don't understand or appreciate copyright. Now, that phrase right there is interesting to me, because what you've just done is you've lumped people who just don't give a shit. It's like, yeah, no, I know what copyright is. I understand it fine. It's stupid, with people who actually don't know what it is, you know, toddlers. So you've effectively lumped in anyone who doesn't give a shit or doesn't care or doesn't agree with your view with the people who don't actually know what it is. I just find that an interesting bit of linguistic logic there.
Right, because if you aren't with them, you're the enemy.
Absolutely. So what it is they're finding out that most users don't agree with them, but we've lumped it in with the users who don't understand it, so we've made it look like it's an educational issue, not a political one. That's just, I love little twists of language like that, because that's exactly what it is. We found that most consumers do not understand or appreciate, there it is again, concepts, and they put understand first because they want to make you think it's an issue of you don't know anything, and when that's not it at all. We found that most consumers do not understand or appreciate concepts that many of us in policy and legal communities take for granted, like the meaning of copyright, Lesser notes. These and other insights are used to better communicate their anti-piracy messaging, and CCI hopes this will eventually lead to less copyright infringements. This research is helping us to better understand the drivers of consumer behavior around piracy, and we hope to help us improve CCI's effectiveness in communicating our message and ultimately reduce the level of online piracy, blah, 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 blah. Where the fuck was it? We have developed a new copyright curriculum that is currently being piloted this academic year in California, Lesser informs the House Judiciary Subcommittee. The kindergarten through sixth grade curriculum, entitled Be a Creator, is a result of CCI's partnership with the California Schools Library Association and I Keep Safe, a digital literacy organization. The Be a Creator program was also mentioned during the launch of the Copyright Alert System, but at that time it wasn't known that kindergartners would be targeted. Torrent Freak talked to Public Knowledge President and co-founder Gigi Son, who is a member of CCI's advisory board. She assured us that there are several safeguards in place to assure that the end product will be objective. Yeah, bullshit. Advisory board was brought in for advice at various stages in the process. Rest assured, the curriculum isn't being perceived as anything but fair. It won't proceed beyond the pilot stage, Soren said. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, I can't even read. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, however, is skeptical about the educational program, and it feels that it will be biased towards copyright holders. You think? Based on what we've seen so far, the curriculum will do little to help kids understand copyright balance. Instead, they're going to teach kids that creative works are stuff that can be owned and must always check before using that stuff, the EFF commented. So the full course materials haven't been published. But yeah, so the RIAA has put together the CCI group. And the CCI group is putting together a curriculum for California kids starting in kindergarten and going through sixth grade to teach them about copyright. And they've got an example of some of the material. Pretty much it means you have to check with the copyright holders, you know, them, before you're allowed to do anything. So they're going to go into schools and they're going to start teaching kids that before you're allowed to create anything, you have to check with the RIAA and the MPAA to make sure that it's okay first.
Wow. This is going to be the equivalent to the war on drugs, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure Cory Doctorow predicted this on Pirate Cinema. They were talking about their RIAA class, or you know, copyright law class that they had to take in school.
Wow.
That's pretty much he described this one for one. That's terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is the listener's license out of freaking After Now too. So I mean, yeah. it's oh, you want to use the little picture they have of the curriculum material. It's like, oh well, you know, you have to check with the original creator before you can use something.
And let me check with my wife to see if we're doing anything like that in our primary schools.
Because that's terrifying to me.
Because if they are, I'll get the full how they're doing it and everything like that, and let you guys know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but they're going into schools and just basically teaching them that before you're allowed to invent, create, or draw anything, you have to check with the current copyright monopoly to make sure that it's okay. In other words, the concept that you could create something and do something outside of the established industry is anathema to them, and they're going to train kids to believe that. That, oh no, you have to check with MGM and Universal and Sony Music and everybody else before you make a song. Oh, you're going to play music? Well, you got to get licensed. What if it's your own music? Oh no, you still got to get licensed.
Although, to be fair, this is probably going to be about as effective as the abstinence-only classes and the, you know, the DARE classes or the Students Against Drug Use classes and all that other crap.
But McGruff the Crime Dog says...
Yeah. Nothing, because you got hit by a bus 3 years ago and I couldn't give a shit.
You know,
he's the equivalent of winners don't use drugs. Fuck it, I'll never win anything. I might as well do a line of speed.
I love seeing that all over the arcade machines back in the 80s.
Does it just say to you that if you can't beat the game, you might as well go behind the arcade, smoke some pot with the losers because you're that fucking stupid? It's the only way you're going to feel good. Go do some drugs, you loser.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... This is terrifying to me that they're going to be teaching kids that, you know, you have to check with this organization of companies before you can do anything. Because that's essentially it.
Wow, being a rebel as a kid these days is going to be really easy. I'm playing music without a license.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, badass.
That everybody's just going to laugh at it so hard. I mean, like, what, really?
Unless there's some real-world consequences that they're going to put in, I can't see it actually making a difference. No, you're going to get one or two paranoid kids like, no, I can't be around Johnny because he's listening to pirated music.
Yeah, it's like, what? You have an iPod? Did you buy all of that music? I mean, no. Come on. It'd be like when Tack tells that story about how he got harassed for handing out his own music on a CD. Next one up is from NJ.com and is written terribly, but it was the short version. So, what's black and white and red all over? A newspaper, but also a miniature plastic Holstein cow that a New Jersey man rigged with his easy pass to find out when the device was being monitored. When the cow alarm goes off, it signals that the Easy Pass is being tracked. According to a story on Forbes.com, the cow was moving all over New York City, well past where the Easy Pass toll was paid. Just on the 6/10 of a mile between Times Square and Madison Square Garden, the cow went off 5 times. In the city, information is collected on vehicles and Easy Pass with Easy Pass transponders so that traffic flow can be monitored, but license plate numbers or drivers are not revealed. Still, the New Jersey motorist, described as a electronics tinkerer and identified by his internet handle, Puking Monkey, found the experience intrusive and unsettling. So, I guess to clarify a little bit, this guy built a little detector so that if something was reading on the same frequency that his Easy Pass would use, it would go off so he could log and see how often the thing was actually being read. And apparently the thing pretty much lights up and stays on the whole time you're driving around New York. So he's like, oh my God, they're tracking me, which could be true. And I'm sure they are checking every once in a bit, you know, traffic flow, that kind of stuff. But I'm wondering how many false positives this guy was getting too.
Yeah. That's pretty terrifying, but really just don't carry it with you. Or better yet, just get yourself one of those little Faraday cage boxes and just keep it in there.
Yeah. What were you going to say, are you?
I just assume that if you're in a rental vehicle or something like that, that you're being tracked.
Well, I mean, if you're carrying a modern cell phone, I mean...
Well, yeah, or even conversation being recorded within the vehicle that you're traveling in for legal purposes and things like that.
So, let's see. Next one up. This one's kind of funny. It's from ZDNet. A fresh report brought on by a Freedom of Information request by the government transparency site MuckRock showed that the NSA purchased data on zero-day vulnerabilities from the software to use them from the French security company Vupin. According to documents, the NSA signed up for a one-year binary analysis and exploit service contract offered by Vupin last September. Vupin describes itself as the leading provider of defensive and offensive cybersecurity intelligence and advanced vulnerability research. In other words, the security firm finds flaws in software and systems and then sells the data on to governments. In addition, Vupin offers offensive security solutions, including extremely sophisticated and government-grade zero-day exploits specifically designed for critical and offensive cyber operations. Zero-day vulnerabilities are security flaws in systems discovered by researchers and cyber attackers which have not been found or patched by the vendor. These flaws can then be exploited to gain access to the system and its information, or vulnerabilities can be sold on the black market. White hat hackers may reveal the flaw to the vendor for free as part of a bug bounty program. The finding isn't all that surprising, considering a report released in May previously claimed that the United States is the world's biggest buyer of malware. So, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, obviously they're not going to go develop all their own research when a lot of it's already out there and they can just buy it.
True.
So, it is a government agency. They're going to contract out as much as they possibly can.
Right.
So, anybody who's surprised by this needs to reach between your ass cheeks and pull your head out, because they're operating that way just like everybody else. And at this point, pretty much the government is not your friend. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Hey, they buy guns too, people. Surprise, surprise. The only reason I wanted to cover that one is because I saw so many people who were shocked by it. What, really?
Why? Really?
Not so much shocked, just saddened.
Yeah, it's kind of like, duh. What, you think they were inventing all their own attacks? God, no. they get them from the same place as everybody else. They buy them, or they get them from the free websites, or they occasionally stumble on one. Next one up is from the Daily Dot. Say you're a government that recently faced massive public opposition that organized through social media bad enough that you consider banning Twitter outright. What's your next step? Well, if you're Turkey, you start playing that game yourself. The country's ruling Justice and Development Party has announced the Justice and Development Party.
Yes, deal with it.
Has announced plans to develop a 6,000-member team devoted to shaping public opinion through social media, the Wall Street Journal has reported. The goal is mostly to hire young people and will focus primarily on Twitter and Facebook, though Instagram and YouTube will get some attention too. A senior party official quoted in the journal described the project as aimed at developing a positive political language in which we are teaching to our volunteers, and that when the opposing camp spreads disinformation about the party, we will correct them with valid information using positive language. He said, you know, bridging his fingers behind his cloak. A handful of other countries, namely China and Vietnam, officially employ similar propaganda tactics. Both those companies are ranked far more harshly on Reporters Without Borders' Enemies of the Internet Index. Also note, apparently Reporters Without Borders is keeping an Enemies of the Internet Index. I want to know where I rank on that one. In May and June, the AKP, which is the party, received resounding international criticism for its violent crackdown on a popular uprising surrounding the government's attempt to replace Istanbul's Gezi Park. The party was caught completely off guard with how promoters can organize through Twitter, especially as Turkey's traditional media barely mentioned the protests. At the time, Turkey arrested at least 29 people for tweeting misleading information or propaganda. The head of AKP, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has yet to tweet the Turkish word for irony. So, yeah, Turkey is setting up a cyber bullshit team. By the way, I bet the United States is running one, too.
Yeah, Israel, Australia, New Zealand, pretty much every country is doing it.
Yeah, I just love the language of when the opposing camp spreads disinformation, we will correct them.
Wow.
It just depends how many years of correction you have to go through, depending on which nation you're in.
As he struck his pinky in the air and stroked his white cat. I mean, God, really? I mean, come on. Try to be less melodramatic. I mean... Okay, next one up is from Torrent Freak. Sard sent me this story, although I think technically I may have had it open before he sent it to me, but I was probably going to skip it. So here we go. The majority of reports and press releases put out by the music industry groups over the past several years can be summarized in a few words. Piracy is evil, and we lose a lot of money because of it. On the other side, however, numerous studies have also shown that on average, file sharers spend more money on legal purchases, whether it's music or box office tickets. The most logical explanation for this finding is that pirates are more engaged than those who don't share, and that they complement their legal purchases with unauthorized downloads. The above indicates that music piracy might not be the right scapegoat for the massive losses the industry has suffered since the early 2000s, at least not the prime reason. This appears to be supported by new data released by the UK Telecom's regulator Ofcom last week. Since last year, Ofcom has surveyed the download habits of tens of thousands of Brits. The latest data shows that between March and May of this year, about 9% of the UK or people in the UK pirated music. Really? 9%? So what are the other 91% of people doing that they're not getting caught? with Ofcom signaling a clear downward trend compared to last year. The estimated number of downloads tracked in the UK dropped from 301 million last year to 199 million in the latest measurement. In other words, according to Ofcom's findings, a third of all music piracy evaporated in a year. It could just be that no good music came out.
It's entirely possible.
The number of people who admitted pirating music during the same period dropped as well, approximately 10% during the same time frame. This is great news for the music industry, but neither the BPI or IFPI have cheered on its findings in a press release. It might be that they are not convinced of the data, or perhaps they too might have noticed that the unprecedented drop in piracy has had virtually no effect on music sales. While it's true that streaming services such as Spotify are expanding their user base at a rapid pace, overall sales revenue in the UK are still dropping. While piracy plunged, music sales fell from $1.4 billion in 2011 to $1.33 billion, a hefty 6.1% decrease. Previously, when music piracy increased, various industry groups pointed out that there was a direct correlation with the decline in sales. This argument will be much harder to make since the opposite just happened. of course, music industry can point out how blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I'm going to quit reading the rest of the story there. Pretty much, they did a study and they figured out that piracy is down, but sales are also still down. So it could just be that the music you're putting out sucks.
Well, yeah, it that's definitely a part of it. But, you know, I honestly think it's more that they're still pushing an old business model. Even if they're getting online and everything like that, they're still not really getting it. And there's a lot of other services and stuff like that out there where you kind of feel more connected to that music. And like, only that, but like there's so much free music out there. Like there's so many small bands.
Yeah,
that
you're going,
you know,
to where I was
stuff out there.
I was getting ready to say is, I bet these sales figures don't include independent stuff. Do you think they have any sales from Bandcamp in those figures? Probably not.
Well, because you know, like the people who sell on Bandcamp generally aren't part of a major label.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Are they counting anybody who doesn't go through the major publishers? Probably not. So what this report says to me is not that music is going away. It's just that these companies are going away.
Yeah.
But because everybody's convinced that those companies are music,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, oh, total sales went down. Well, no. Well, I'll bet music distribution is up.
Yeah.
And I'll bet there's even numbers out there on independent artists going way up just because people can get at it now.
But like, cool.
Sorry, Major, you go right ahead, mate.
I was just going to say, I don't know about you guys, but like, back like 5 years ago, let's say, I was a huge pirater of music. Like, gigabytes and gigabytes of songs and stuff like that kicking around. But in the last few years, at least, I haven't pirated a single song. And in fact, I've purchased music a number of times. But mind you, every single time I've purchased it, it's been through like an independent source, like Bandcamp or directly from the artist's website or something like that. And you can't track those stats. And you know, if anybody else out there has usage at all similar to what I'm doing, you can't really track it.
So that's kind of what I think's going on too. Is I think it's just moving away from this particular industry.
Well, you just have to look at
the
history, man. Like, this happened with Hollywood way back in the day. They were doing all those musicals, you know, ticket sales were just massive in theaters. And then suddenly the average Joe didn't want to see another bloody musical because they were just sick of it because they were turning out so many shit musicals that no one wanted to go and see it anymore. So the era of the big studios started to die. Then in the late 70s, you had all these independent artists like Lucas and all those who were just starting out as young filmmakers churning out hundreds and hundreds of B-grade films that went on to be massively popular, like a small little self-made movie called Star Wars or Dog Day Afternoon, you know, some of the great classics. Mm-hmm. So the next thing, the big media houses are in there like, yeah, and they figured out how to make money with the big box office blast, and then number two, and then number three in the sequels, and then everyone went, I'm sick of watching sequels. So then they started remaking everything. And now people, I'm sick of watching remakes. Hollywood's fucking crashing again, if anyone hasn't noticed.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The same thing, and then it's the rise of the young artists and movie makers online. How many web shows do you watch now?
Oh, yeah.
And, right. You know, like, way more.
And even, like, there's a number of good TV shows and stuff like that. But, like, you know, a good example is on Netflix. What is it? House of Cards, I think
House
it is.
House of Cards was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, like, that's essentially
some big-name actors in it, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, like, this is a web-only TV series, as far as I understand. Like, this is Netflix exclusive. And you know, you're going to see that sort of thing happen a lot more. Just
do you think Netflix is getting counted in this kind of report?
No.
Yes. Like you guys said, I think it's a dying industry that's trying to say, look, we're right, piracy is bad, but they aren't looking at all the factors.
They're not keeping up with the times. You know, yeah. They're trying to stick with the old business models, and they're trying to get all their stuff out on cable and all this other sort of crap. And it's just not the way it works anymore. And they don't seem to understand that.
Well, that, and they're trying to make the new systems into the old ones again. You know, that's why you see, you know, they're trying to push ISPs to the point where it's like, well, you get your Google package and you get your Facebook package. And
you'd think that they would have learned from all of these technology shifts that have happened throughout the last century. You know, like when before TV came out, Like RU was saying, movie theaters were a huge thing. That's where all these big companies and everything were happening. And then TVs got cheap enough where all of a sudden everybody's got a television in their home. And all of a sudden, all these big show companies are starting to hemorrhage money because they don't have this customer base that they once had. And they didn't adapt. And, well, most of them didn't adapt, and they are all gone now. And, you know, the same thing happened when the Walkman came out. And, you know, like, all these different things. And, like, when you don't adapt to it, you just disappear.
All right. Well, we've certainly dug the RIAA's grave, and we're currently making them hold the pistol. So,
I'm not digging their grave. We make them dig it.
No, we
for
made
them
dig their own. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right, they've dug their own at this point. I mean, they've pissed off everybody who cares.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anybody who even remotely looks at it, you know, doesn't like them. You know, they've sued their fan base. The only reason they're still going at this point is inertia.
Mm-hmm. So. Right.
All right, last one up. This one's from UPI.com. Spanish scientists are reporting the world's first self-healing polymer that spontaneously and independently repairs itself without any intervention. The new material, dubbed a Terminator polymer, in tribute to the shape-shifting molten T-100 Terminator. It was the T-1000.
T-1000.
T-1000, exactly.
Damn it. Come on, UPI.
A Terminator robot from the Terminator 2 film could be used to improve the security and lifetime of plastic parts in everyday products such as electric components, cars, and even houses. The researchers wrote in Materials Horizons Journal of Britain's Royal Society of Chemistry. This is the first self-healing polymer that can spontaneously achieve quantitative healing in the absence of a catalyst, they said, and that after being cut in two and the pieces pressed together, the sample displayed an impressive 97% healing efficiency in just 2 hours, being unbreakable when stretched manually. The self-healing thermoset elastometers, and I knew how to say that word when I read it the first time, were created from common polymetric starting materials using simple and inexpensive approach, the researchers reported. The fact that the polyurethanes with similar chemical composition and mechanical properties are already in use in a wide variety of commercial products makes this system very attractive for fast and easy implementation in real industrial applications, they've said. So, to clarify, they've made plastic that if you cut it and then shove it back together, seals back up and seals up to the point where it sticks. You can't just yank it apart.
From what I understand with this type of material, what they have, it's basically a bunch of little bubbles of the plastic in some sort of a solution that when it's exposed to the air, it starts to set. So if it gets a crack or, yeah, you cut it or something like that, these bubbles will be popped and this you know, liquid plastic or whatever that's in there will then solidify and heal it. At least that's my understanding of this technology.
So that's the way I thought it worked too.
I want a baseball bat made out of the stuff.
Nice. You know, I gotta say, materials that are coming out, and they're coming out so fast, it's mind-boggling the types of cool stuff that we're getting now. So, you know, you've got the self-healing plastics. I just stumbled across a product the other day. It's basically liquid glass. You spray it on, and it's essentially just silicone crystals in water solution. You spray it on, and it's formulated in such a way that it bonds to the whatever surface you put it on, and you just end up with a micron thick layer of glass on whatever you put it on. You can even, it's flexible at that level, so you can put it on cloth and stuff too. But unlike a lot of these other like hydrophobic spray-ons and stuff, it's just glass, so it's non-toxic and stuff. You can put it on your skin. They're selling it for, like, your hair and crap like that. Cover your hair in this fine layer of glass to keep it dry in the day and, like, all kinds of weird stuff like that. And, like, just the manufacturing of materials at this point, it's completely revolutionary, and I don't think a lot of people really understand the implications it's going to have over the next decade or two.
Well, okay, here's a very real implication for a plastic like this. Most of your car body is plastic. So let's say you get in a minor fender bender or, you know, somebody hits your door.
Never happened.
Right. you get doored, you get keyed, whatever. Well, if the plastic's already the color you want for the car, A lot of times it'll, you just pop it back into place and it'll seal itself up. So you don't have to take it in and get a panel replaced or something like that. Now, obviously, it's probably only got a limited number of times it'll do it, but who cares? Now think about this for medical devices.
Wouldn't do it.
Ooh.
They won't do it. They've got to have fallibility. Otherwise, you can't resell a product.
Well, that's true.
They started doing that in the late 60s, wasn't it? Building in fail safes and stuff fails.
Well, okay. Think about if you replaced a bone with this stuff. Like maybe, you had a real bad break of your arm or leg.
So exposed to air.
Well, we don't know for sure.
I don't know that. But
I'm sure they can make a formulation that has to be exposed to blood.
Fair enough.
But if you think about it, it's like, oh, you break that leg again. Or, maybe you put it in a false limb. Mm-hmm. You just straighten it out. It's going to set. I just make sure you do it quickly enough so it doesn't set in a weird shape. And, you stretch it out, put it back together, and it'll just set and you're done.
Yeah. Awesome.
Now, the application for this isn't there's not a million and one applications for this, but, you think something like armor, like some kind of a trauma plating on a nylon cloth?
Yeah.
I mean, you snap it back in place and it just seals up. So... All right, time for this. For all the problems we had with the mic, I think I did get the cue output fixed.
Yeah, so. Sounded good, dude.
I got some feedback from Jantes, who asked me to look into some Tor alternatives. And I wanted to point out, I like the idea of people sending in what they want us to talk about for Digital Dojo and discussion topics. And, it's an excellent use of the feedback form because by telling us what you want us to talk about, that'll keep me from rambling on about things like network architecture or, MIDI step sequencers made out of Arduinos or other random bullshit that I might happen to be dealing with. Cause pretty much on Digital Dojo, if I don't have something that's pointing out at me, like that I have to talk about or something going on to get my attention on it, I'm just going to go with whatever I'm messing with at the time. That may not be interesting to anybody else. So anyways,
that's about work, dude. Yeah, that's cool. I don't care either way.
So anyways, probably the most direct alternative to Tor is a system called I2P. And pretty much from their website here, I2P is a project to build, deploy, and maintain a network supporting secure and anonymous communication. People using I2P are in control of the trade-offs between anonymity, reliability, bandwidth use, and latency. There is no central point in the network on which pressure can be exerted to compromise the integrity, security, or anonymity of a system. The network supports dynamic reconfiguration in response to various attacks and has been designed to make use of additional resources as they become available. So, I guess to kind of clarify a little bit, I2P's system is very similar to the DHT that BitTorrent uses to, the decentralized trackers that BitTorrent uses. So, I'm going to quit reading this link from the website here because it's all advertising. But pretty much what I2P does is it gives you access to the I2P network when you run their little router software. And the router software is designed such that, unlike Tor, like Tor you can use to anonymize yourself when you go hit a website, right? So, what's a common example? You get banned from a forum, so you want to get back on the forum. You use Tor to get a different IP, get back in the forum, right? Or, that's probably one of the more common uses. What's one of the advertised uses? Oh, you're in some part of the world where if they figure out you're sending messages to, somebody in the United States, you'll be shot for treason or whatever, So Tor is useful for that kind of thing. But what a lot of people don't know is that Tor was actually set up by the Navy, or at least it was funded by the Navy. It was started by the government, and in light of all the PRISM stuff, that kind of makes you wonder about it a little bit, especially with the attacks that happened lately. But the slug from Wikipedia here, originally sponsored by the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, Tor was financially supported by the EFF from 2004-2005 and is now developed by the Tor Project. So, yeah, the government started Tor. The Navy did that. But I2P is not very concerned about anonymizing yourself to other services. I2P is more concerned with connecting to the I2P network and hitting services inside the darknet. So, you know, you can go to the different Tor services. You know, there's hidden servers in Tor, but that's not actually its primary function. Its primary function is anonymizing yourself, you know, hitting other stuff out on the internet, right? So what I2P does is you set up hidden services, and the way I2P routes, it doesn't actually know where one message is coming from versus another. It's not like onion routing where there's a line going back into it, you know, back and forth on the onion routing. You kind of discover through these swarms the people you're trying to communicate with. And Suave, that retro share program that you like,
yep,
it operates on a lot of the same principles. I wonder if they were sharing a code base or ideas.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Because it's the same idea. If you connect up to this swarm, and then when you're communicating with the service, it'll do what they call garlic routing, which pretty much after they've established a communication with each other via the regular messaging, they'll set up a pseudo onion routing back and forth to just for speed purposes. And you can get in and get some really deep configuration on that. But anyways, I2P, you know, uses these things called EEP sites, EEP sites. And what that is you run web applications inside I2P or BitTorrent or IRC or anything else. I2P is actually meant to carry anything, but you anonymize or anonymize, if I could say the word correctly. I have been drinking. You hide who the hell you are talking to these hidden services, but it's not, these hidden services aren't out there on the internet. They're only inside the I2P network. So right. am I making sense here? Because I'm kind of rambling a little bit.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So it's like a dark net within
It's a dark net within the internet. That's the exactly protocol. What it is.
Well, yeah, within, but I mean only using that specific protocol.
Right. There are proxies to get back out of I2P onto the regular internet, but at that point you're just going through a proxy. So that's not really its focus. It's really focused on its own network. So, unfortunately, I did not get as much time to play with it as I thought I would. I kind of got in there and poked at it a little bit, and it's kind of cool because it maintains these, you subscribe to site lists, so there's no real central server. There's index sites that you connect to get a list of places to go, but anybody can set one up. There's no, you know, you don't have to go through some centralized service. You can add anyone you want, or somebody else could set one up. So, you know, if the NSA came in and nuked everything with I2P, as long as you had a copy of the program, you could probably set it up again.
So you have to see, like, there's no search engine, or it just sounds like it's just like a big list or something? Or?
It's a list, yeah. You subscribe to a list. And they start discovering each other as they connect out to nodes, and you can get to more stuff that way. It's got some of the notions of Freenet in it, where it's a large distributed system. But one of the nice things I found out about I2P versus Tor is when you're using Tor, your machine is not just going into Tor, but you're also an exit node for Tor. So somebody else could be coming out of your system out on the network. Now, I know a lot of people who set up Tor, it doesn't happen very much. Most people go out through the Tor exit nodes. But technically, every client on Tor is supposed to be an exit node. So, because I2P's focus isn't getting back out onto the regular internet, the concept of an exit node doesn't really exist. And the way you identify other users on the network is by a GPG cryptographic hash. So there's no real identifying factor on there. Once you're kind of in the cloud of I2P, and there's no real way to distinguish one node from another. you know, even based on messages, the way the encryption works. Now, like a lot of these things we've pointed out, they have asked, you know, they have pointed out that, hey, a lot of our encryption hasn't been thoroughly tested, so it, you know, there might be implementation program or problems. So at least they're upfront about it.
Yeah.
Now, I found a nice little article comparing Tor to I2P. It's on IVPN.net, and I'm not going to read through the thing, especially seeing as we're an hour and a half in again. So I'm just going to link to it in the show notes if you're curious about it. But like I said, I2P is interesting because, you know, Tor is very specific in that it's trying to hide who you are on the internet. It's a way of getting from point A to point B on the internet without revealing the steps in between. I2P is more about its own system. It does that, but it doesn't care about getting back out onto the regular internet. I2P is all about its own hidden services where you know, not only can you not identify who somebody is, but if you're not explicitly talking to a service, good luck figuring out who the messages are even coming from. In fact, it generates a whole bunch of fake crap that's flying around its network just to dissuade people from trying to figure out, you know, by watching traffic patterns.
Huh, that's interesting. I thought there were special Tor-only websites as well, though.
There are.
In a similar sense, yeah.
Yeah, there are. There's hidden services in Tor. But right. Tor's, that's not what, it works, but it wasn't what Tor was really designed for.
Right.
Tor was designed so that you could get back onto a regular site and bypass, you know, censorship, or, you know, try to hide that it's coming from you so that you're not going to get in trouble for, you know, whistleblowing or leaking or, you know, a lot of Tor was initially set up with the idea of getting around things like the firewall of China and, you know, stuff in the Middle East and places where if you espouse the wrong ideas, you know, you get your head cut off.
Wow.
So, but, you know, the idea of Tor is giving those people a way to get what's going on out, but get back on the regular internet, you know, wherever they can post stuff. But I2P was initially based off setting up completely hidden IRC servers.
Yeah.
So that's still a big part of it, is getting into the I2P IRC stuff. But they've also got it set up for BitTorrent because it's a lot of the same protocols, and unlike Tor, you know, a lot of everybody, anything you read on Tor is like, oh, don't use BitTorrent, don't use file sharing because there's not enough bandwidth for it. I2P is like, fuck it, use BitTorrent. That's what it's for. But I mean, but if you're using BitTorrent and I2P, you're not going to get anything that's outside of I2P.
Right.
And not only that, anybody who's used BitTorrent on a regular network, you can tell who's doing it. BitTorrent's very obvious and very easy for your network operators to tell.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like I2P, a safer alternative.
Man, you're never going to figure it out. Well, not unless you break their encryption. Because the way it does its signing, message passing, and you know, adds all the garbage to the stream. Yeah, you'll see all this stuff going on, but phew, good luck figuring out what it is. They could be in a chat room. They could be looking at websites. They could just be sitting there running an ITP node and just relaying messages for everybody. So it's... You know, without going and checking out the endpoint directly, it's really rough to figure out what's going on I2P.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a safer alternative to me.
Yeah, like I said, I2P is all about its darknet. It's not about getting back out onto the regular network.
Right, which makes sense. Interesting.
So I wanted to play with it more before we talked about it, but I just frankly didn't get the chance. So I'll probably play with it more and get back. Do another Digital Dojo segment on it, little tricks and stuff like that. But if you go on the I2P website, which was i2p2.de, they've got not only the little router program you run to get access to I2P, but all the little programs to get onto it, because it runs, you know, you don't just point your BitTorrent client at it. You run the I2P enabled BitTorrent client, because it's going to hit the little router program that runs on your machine, which wraps your traffic into I2P, and you get onto the system that way. And they've got a chat, IRC chat, and they had an email-like system. So it's interesting. It looks like a lot of fun to play with. But you know, unlike Tor, you could actually use ITP for beaconing out. Like if you wanted to leave a box on a network somewhere and you didn't think you'd get a public IP, you could actually use ITP to beacon out. Assuming it can get around the NAT, it's kind of got the same issue where it may or may not make it work if it doesn't have a node it can talk to that it can discover. So, but it'll at least keep trying. So, let's see. That's pretty much all I've got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. We just got the damn thing working again, so hopefully it'll stay up a bit for us. Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. Are we planning an I Have Nothing Saturday?
Yeah, I think we are. Are we, man?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to do the Epics episode.
The Epics episode. And of course, beware of the disclaimer at the beginning of the show, because that thing is creepy. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, the sim on OS Grid, the subreddit, and if you really want to, we'll set up a P.O. box where you can send big, really creepy porn. That's, I'm going to hit play on this music now, unless anybody has anything to add.
Hungry, I'm going to eat.
Style camouflage ready for miles. I am a mastermind.